Whoever you are, wherever you come from, whomever you love, we welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. I'm the Reverend Renee Rahutsky. I'm the affiliated community minister of this congregation in service of my work with our national association. I'm joined by Commission Lay Minister Lori Fatchett McGee, Intern Minister Dave Clements, Music Director Hal Walker, the Fallow Time Brass Quartet, the UU Church of Kent Peace Choir, and the UU Church of Kent Tone Chimers. We have a cast of thousands this evening. Through this Advent season, this season of waiting, we have asked for patience, light, peace, and love.
Now that the waiting is over, now that that which was to be has come, we light the flame of hope.
We welcome the coming of the days we have waited for.
We have realized hope, yet know that hope can never be realized. We commit ourselves to patience, to working to dispel the darkness, to working for peace.
We commit ourselves to love and to hope.
We light this flame as an end, as a beginning, as the symbol of the eternal now.
Has been a difficult year. All the violence across the world, a divisive political climate in our country, and the loss of the beloved minister of this congregation have left many of us here tonight feeling scared, untethered, and sad. How can we possibly find joy again? One of my childhood heroes, Mr. Rogers, put it this way. When I was a boy and I could see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, "Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping." Let us try to be those people. Let us be the helpers. Let us use the force of love to make the world a better place. For love always wins in the end. Come, let us worship together. Would you please rise in body or spirit for our first carol, Joy to the World?
Thank you.
Is told of an O. Henry story of a young couple, and many of us have probably heard this story, but I want just to take a few minutes and let us kind of think about that story, and let me give you some of the context of it, those who might not be familiar with it. But a young couple is struggling, and the wife has beautiful long hair, and the husband has a prize pocket watch. And the wife wants to get a gift that would mean something to her beloved for Christmas. And as she goes through her money, she realizes that she has hardly anything that could buy him what she would like. And so she decides that she will take, and by cutting off her beautiful hair, she will then have the funds to be able to purchase a chain for his wonderful pocket watch. And so she puts her plan in place and goes and begins to have her hair cut and gets the money and buys the chain, gets some pork chops for dinner and goes home and waits anxiously for her loved one to come home. Now he is wondering what he can get to her for her, and he too is short of funds, and so he proceeds to sell his watch. And with that, he decides that he can buy her beautiful combs for her hair. And so he too goes home very excited with a gift. And as the evening wears on and as they exchange their presents, they realize that really and truly the gifts mean not really a whole lot, except for the fact that they really do mean something, because these are the gifts that were given out of pure love. And as we ponder upon that story, I was reminded of an experience that a friend of mine had related several years ago of a flight attendant who was struggling to get home for Christmas to be with her beloved father who was dying. And as she was flying across the country, she got stranded in Omaha, Nebraska, and planes weren't flying anywhere. And she sat down and began to cry and was very sad. And as she noticed a young family that was there with many bags of Christmas gifts, and a young child looked over at the flight attendant and saw that she was sad, and she reached into her bag and pulled out a present that had her name on it and proceeded to go and give it to the flight attendant to say, "Here, maybe this will make you feel happy." And as the flight attendant opened up the present, there was a doll that the young child had wanted. And so in that simple act of giving, once again, the meaning of Christmas, the meaning of the season, was realized. And as you ponder upon this, these gifts and the reason for this season, may you celebrate the joy of giving. Amen.
What you gonna call your pretty little baby? Oh, Lord, pretty little baby. Oh, Lord, pretty little baby. Lord. Glory be to the newborn King.
What you gonna call
And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, full of grace and truth. From the book of John, chapter 1, verse 14. As a child growing up in the Methodist Church, the Christmas Eve service always made me teary. Everything about it moved me. The story, the music, the candlelight, the scent of pine, the silent night, the warm presence of family and friends. And for reasons I did not understand, I was touched to the core by the curious claim that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. I was blessed, as all children are, with what Zen Buddhists call beginner's mind. So the theological distinction between the Word, capital W, and a Word escaped me. Free of creedal complexities, I was simply captivated by the notion that something as airy as a word could take on bodily form. At the time, I did not understand why it moved me so. Today, I do. There is often a distressing disconnect between the good words we speak and the way we live our lives. In personal relations and politics, the mass media, the academy, and organized religion, our good words tend to float away even as they leave our lips, ascending to an altitude where they neither reflect nor connect with the human condition. We long for words like love, truth, and justice to become flesh and dwell among us. But in our violent world, it's risky business to wrap our frail flesh around words like those, and we don't like the odds. In the Christmas story, God, an airy word if there ever was one, takes the risk of incarnation. The flesh God chooses is not that of a warrior, but of a vulnerable baby, a claim that brought me to tears of wonderment when I was young. But my adult knowledge of that infant's fate, a fate shared by so many who have devoted their lives to love, truth, and justice, brings tears of anger and grief, along with a primal fear of what might happen if I followed suit. As a Quaker who believes that there is that of God in everyone, I know I am called to share in the risk of incarnation. Amid the world's dangers, I am asked to embody my values and beliefs, my identity and integrity, to allow good words to take flesh in me. Constrained by fear, I often fall short. Yet I still aspire to incarnate words of life, however imperfectly. An infant in a manger is as vulnerable as we get. What an infant needs is not theological debate, but nurturing. The same is true of all the good words seated in our souls that cry out to become embodied in this broken world. If these vulnerable but powerful parts of ourselves are to find the courage to take on flesh, to suffer yet survive and thrive, transforming our lives along with the life of the world, they need the shelter of unconditional love. For those of us who celebrate Christmas, the best gift we can offer others, whatever their faith or philosophy may be, is a simple question asked with heartfelt intent. What good words wait to be born in us? And how can we love one another in ways that midwife their incarnation? You have to know your body as the home of God, and this is the purpose of Christmas. The rose blossoming in the wilderness is the unfolding of your pleasure as the fingers peel an orange and sweetness buds in the mouth. The bright star in the night sky is the sudden clarity of your instinct for joy. The birth cry in the night is your child falling into the dark and your arms holding her. The terror of Herod's murderous intent is your rage that would prefer death to change. The singing angel is your voice at church, not sure of the tune, but certain for a moment that there is glory. The animals breathing in their warm breath in the fragile stable are your emotions kneeling into the body of earth at ease in the presence of God. Mary is you, God in your body. Joseph is you, strength sheltering the world. This is the key to the mystery. The Word became flesh. We are the dwelling place.
Christmas story, we have three very different ideas of what power looks like. King Herod was wealthy and brilliant, and he loved power. He crushed his political opponents. He had the Roman army at his disposal and used them to keep himself in power. He levied enormous taxes to pay for his extraordinary building projects, including the temple at Jerusalem. He was suspicious and cruel. With so little regard for human life, he would order executions of anyone who he thought might challenge him. Not even his family was exempt. Whenever he thought his sons or his wives posed a threat, he had them killed. The three magi had the power of wisdom. They were able to see what the Jewish chief priests and scribes could not, that a new era was about to dawn. They also had the wisdom to trick Herod by not revealing the baby Jesus, instead going home by a different route. Then we have the power of God made flesh, of love incarnate, all in the person of the baby Jesus. For me, the nativity story is a strong metaphor for the struggle between these different kinds of power, the power of hate and the power of love, the power of selfishness and the power of selflessness, the power of cruelty and the power of compassion. The capacity for any of these choices lies within each and every one of us. Sometimes we might make choices that we're not proud of. Yet, at Christmas time, we tell stories that encourage love and selflessness and compassion. We tell stories of greediness thwarted, such as Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, and of meaningful gifts shared, such as O. Henry's The Gift of the Magi. We tell these stories to strengthen our consciences, to fortify our moral grounding, and to feed our spiritual need for interconnection. Each one of us has our own center that we must define and sharpen, and each one of us is in relationship with one another and with the earth around us that we must deepen. Our seven principles nod to these human imperatives, but they were written in a very different time, under a worldview based on facts and reason and progressivism, a worldview that seems to have lost some of its currency. I am bewildered and dismayed by what I am seeing and hearing and reading. Isn't love supposed to win? And then I remember, Herod felt threatened by a newborn babe in an obscure family. Somehow, he was right. It turns out that the birth of Jesus in Christianity was one of the great turnings of Western civilization. And in the fullness of time, Jesus' life and teachings changed the way we think about power and its possibilities. Joseph and Mary and Jesus had to lay low and wait for Herod's rule to end. Love may seem small and weak compared to hate, but love endures in a way that hate does not. 150 years ago, Unitarian theologian Theodore Parker predicted the end of slavery as inevitable. You might recognize this quote. "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one, and my eye reaches but a little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by experience of sight. I can divide it by conscience. And from what I see, I am sure that it bends toward justice." I believe that we connect to that arc of the moral universe when we are able to open to the spirit of life and love, to be vulnerable, and to be interdependent. Our religious practices and our community connect us. Our participation in religious community connects us. Many talk today of a new great turning, one that is grounded in our interconnectedness. This great turning sees that power is not a zero-sum game. That power shared is power multiplied. What we call liberal faith may actually be the seedbed of a faith for the future. Another UU theologian, James Luther Adams, witnessed the rise of fascism before World War II and the weak and ineffective opposition of the liberal academics and politicians of the time. He articulated five core values of our faith that resonate with my own theological understanding. First, we need to be in a continuous process of learning and growing in alignment with the spirit of life and love. We do this in communities with accountability, with an acceptance of mistakes as being part of our learning. Science uses peer review. We use small groups in congregational meetings. Second, all relationships should be mutual and free of coercion. We want everyone to flourish and thrive, and we abhor it when people do anything that harms themselves or others. That being said, third, we also have an obligation to create a community based on love and justice, where we can prevent infringements on our freedoms. Ironically, freedom has conditions so that all might be free. Fourth, we have an obligation to shape history in a way that bends the arc of the moral universe toward justice. If not us, then who? Fifth, we humans know how to use hope to sustain us in troubled times. Our oppressed siblings of color have been doing this for centuries, making a way out of no way. They can be our teachers. Our faith and its potential gives me hope. We have a theology of mutuality and interconnectedness that the world needs to hear. We humans are not only the dwelling place of the Spirit, we are stardust, able to reflect and act upon the cosmos whence we came. Let us use our hearts and minds, as well as our hands and voices, to bend the arc of the universe toward justice. Amen, and blessed be. Will the ushers please come forward?
This month's special collection will benefit the Community Action Council Emergency Energy Conservation Fund, an outreach to help residents of Portage County. Please make checks payable to the UU Church of Kent with CAC noted on the memo line, or feel free to use a pew envelope making the special collection box and including your name so we may credit you for the donation. Thank you for your generosity.
Oh,
When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone,
when the kings and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flocks,
the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry,
to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to bring peace among the people,
to make music in the heart.
As we begin the lighting of the candles, be sure to hold your candle upright, allowing the person with the unlit candle to dip into yours. The Spirit of the Holy dwells in each of us. The Spirit of love dwells in each of us. May the flames in our hands remind us that eternal love dwells in our hearts. May the flames in our hands remind us that the Spirit of life dwells among us as we gather as a faith community. May the flames in our hands remind us that the arc of the universe needs our embodied love and faith to bend toward justice. Let us share silent for a few moments together.
Holy and so tender.
illuminate this sanctuary and extinguish our flames. We continue to carry the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.